Nancy Lee, and you can see the whole thing at democracynow.org, and the website for We Are Rising, 1 Billion Rising Eve is
1billionrising.org, and over 500,000 people have already watched this video, so please watch and spread it everywhere.
We want to thank you all for being with us on this V-Day. Democracy Now!, by the way, is accepting applications for a paid year-long news production fellowship here in our New York studios. Get the information at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for Democracy Now!
When it's jazz, it is all good. This is LaBeth of Jazz Montage with All Things Good in Jazz. My signature format offers the silver and gold in jazz, the silver of recent jazz releases by new jazz artists, and the gold of the seasoned artists with their current releases, the current within the last 2 months, that is. Also sharing the things that may have been lost, such as the Miles Davis lost album, or the Queen of Soul, Miss Aretha Franklin, singing jazz. Join me Wednesday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., where here at WHFR 89.3 FM has been giving you the alternative listening treasures for 30-plus years, all things unique and most definitely jazz.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio. From the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn.
Good afternoon and welcome to the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. We've got a jam-packed program today obviously today, Valentine's Day?
Is
love the theme? Or?
Well, love is always the theme, but most especially love is the theme today. And there, as we know, are multiple types of love, Alan. I think it's safe to say that I love you, Alan.
Fair enough.
For a number of reasons.
I appreciate
that.
Yes,
all appropriate, of course. I know your wife could be listening. So
I know you have your own Valentine, but for the purposes of the next 59 minutes, will you be mine for today?
I would be honored.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We are looking to address a few different types of love during the course of this program, and we know it doesn't have to be romantic, of course, and in most cases it's not, and that's a good thing. We're going to talk about love of oneself and love of one's country. And so we're going to put country first, and then we'll go into oneself, and then we'll round it out with our furry friends, the pets. So looking forward to this hour.
Indeed. And I don't know if you saw earlier this week the poodle, standard poodle that won, speaking of pets, mm-hmm. at Westminster, mm-hmm. That would have been on Tuesday evening.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. I actually record that, and I love something about that show. I love watching it, so that's going to be my weekend. I don't know why, something about it just
sorry for the spoiler
thrills
there.
Me. Oh no, I already saw that. Okay. no worries. Well, you know, we talk about spoilers, speaking of which, there is so much going on. You don't have to be watching and listening every moment to realize and understand that there is a lot of activity, a lot of anxiety, a lot of this and that going on in our nation as it relates to politics and government. We want to get more localized, though. We want to get more focused on our community so we can hopefully be a part of the process of empowering our listeners to know that they have not only a responsibility and a right, but also an opportunity to make their voices heard. And in this particular segment, we're going to talk about an opportunity that actually takes place tomorrow. It's a democracy town hall with the League of Women Voters and the NAACP. It is literally taking place tomorrow, February 15th, at the Caroline Kennedy Public Library. It goes from 1 until 3 p.m. right here in our community. And boy, there's a lot going on, a lot to be covered. So we thought we'd bring in the experts, Alan, and they're here in studio with us. The experts on the event, not necessarily on the political part of it, and that's a good thing. But Mary Jo Duravage, our dear friend, is here from the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. We also have Larry and Jerry Biggs, and they represent, or Larry in particular, Community Engagement Coordinator for the Wayne County district, or the Wayne County area of the why am I voters, not politicians. I wanted to say voters without politicians. That doesn't make any sense at all. That defeats the purpose. But so glad to have you all here today. And Mary Jo, we have limited time today. We're definitely going to have you come back and give more detail on what's happening, sort of big picture. But in the very short term, what's going to happen tomorrow and why should listeners participate?
Thank you, first of all, Susan, for the opportunity to share this information with our listeners. So this year, the League of Women Voters of Michigan directed the local leagues to concentrate on three areas. And one are the new voting rights that we received as a result of Prop 3.
A big change, yes. Mm-hmm.
The Independent Citizen Redistricting Commission, which was Prop 2. And then also, of course, the Census 2020. So those are the three items that we're going to cover tomorrow at the town hall that you mentioned. So we will have Larry talk about the redistricting. We will have a notary public there from 1 to 4, I believe, to help people fill out the application. Very important, if people do go on, they need to make sure that they notarize their signature. So that's why we're having the notary public. We will have people there from the census who will share information, but also hopefully get some workers or people interested in working for the census. Very important. And then our own league table will have information about the new voter rights. Our member, Betsy Cushman, is actually on the State League of Women Voters, and so she'll be telling us about the voting rights. And we will have a light lunch. We hope that will encourage some people to come. We are partnering with NAACP, which has been really great. Four of our league members are actually pretty active members in the local NAACP chapter. And so people can stay after 3 o'clock to talk to any of the people there. We'll have information at the tables. And I think that I'll let Larry talk about the redistricting, and then I would like to go back, if we have time, to some to just kind of highlight some of the voter rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as Mary Jo said, we're talking about Proposal 2, which was passed last year with the three proposals, all of which that passed. And now Proposal 2 was to end partisan gerrymandering, and that's what the goal was from the time that that organization Voters Not Politicians began till now. And it's now in the phase of trying to get the Citizens Redistricting Commission into place, and we're looking for people to volunteer to put themselves in the pool by filling out applications and becoming a possible member of the Redistricting Commission. There's only 13 members that are actually going to be on the commission, so if we have 40,000 people from the state of Michigan, the likelihood of any one individual being on is not very great, but we need a good pool for that to happen in a way that we want successfully. So we're asking people to really take the time, fill out the application either online or coming to an event like ours on Saturday, and making sure that you then get it notarized and done in a way that's going to complete the requirements for the application. There is a partisan part of it. Four of the representatives are Democrats, self-declared. Four are Republicans, and five are independent or non-affiliated. So there's a place for everybody in the state. All you have to be is just a registered voter.
And that was going to be my question. The 13, that is statewide, correct?
That is correct.
Is there any geographical representation, given the fact that, you know, we're here in Wayne County, the largest county in the state, and does that play into it at all?
Those demographics are going to be part of it. The, you know, racial demographics, gender. There's going to be regional demographics. Those are going to be considered. Those are things that are going to have weight in the process, but the rest of it will be all based on a lottery. So, but they want to make sure that it's representative of the whole state, that Upper Peninsula as well as the western
correct
side of the state. And
the whole point is that the voters of the state asked for this to take place, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
What kind of a turnaround time are we talking? How quickly must this whole thing be in place so that they can act, the committee can kind of get together and start doing their work?
The applications will be ended by June 1st. Mm. So the process of getting applications is going on right now. The Secretary of State sent out 200,000 random applications that to everybody across the state. I ended up getting one myself. But then after that, then as the committee is chosen, then they will begin to meet and organize later this fall, and they'll have to start having town halls across the state to get input from people all over the state about what are the things that they'd like to see in making the lines drawn for both their congressional districts and for their legislative districts. So,
when is the expectation that this will actually be put into official practice?
2022, the August primaries of 2022. That's the time that everything will be put in place, because it's dependent on the census, which hasn't taken place yet.
Right. So, okay. Fair enough. Sounds fascinating. And if we wanted more information, because there's so many intricacies, I know, with this entire process, but if someone is genuinely, literally considering making this contribution of time to benefit the state of Michigan, how can they get more of these details?
Well, through the Secretary of State's office, if you go online to the Secretary of State, that is one source, but also Voters Not Politicians, you can go vnp.vote/drawtheline, and that will give you an online idea, or you can text draw the line to 555-888.
Okay, thank you.
555-888-888. All right.
Lots of dates.
You mentioned the Secretary of State. She's Jocelyn Benson. She's been in office now for, what, just over a year?
Right.
Coming in right before not only the presidential election, which is not to disparage the other elections, Mary Jo, that you spend a lot of time educating voters about, but especially for young voters, this may be the first time that they vote. She happened to be on our campus last week for part of, you know, the event that took place, and I'm sure I saw both your faces there in the lobby. And we had a chance, one of our students from our journalism class, had a chance to talk to her for just a couple of minutes, just about the perspective of, and not only the changes, and we'll get into that in a minute, but just sort of like walking people through the process who have never voted before. And so we just wanted to give us a chance to listen to that interview, if we can just take just a moment for it.
For people who are reaching 18 and 19, they've never voted before, what is the process like for them to register?
They can go to the Secretary of State's office. They can go online to michigan.gov/vote, or they can go to their local clerk's office and register to vote. And they can also, 40 days prior to an election, request a ballot to be sent to them and vote from home. If they have any questions about any part of the process, they can email me directly at secretary@michigan.gov with any questions.
Okay, awesome. And then what is it like for them on election day? Like, what kind of happens on election day?
On election day itself, you can register to vote and vote right there. You just go into your local clerk's office, say, I'd like to register to vote, bring some sort of residency verification so that you can show you are where you say you are and where you're registering, if you have it, and then also request your ballot, and you can vote right there.
Okay, then is there a deadline to register, or what is the deadline for them to register?
You can register and vote up to 8 p.m. on election day.
And what can people do if they're turned down on election day, or if they go in to vote and they're turned down?
We will have a hotline. It's 866-OUR-VOTE, O-U-R-V-O-T-E. Call that number, and we will have Secretary of State staff deployed throughout the state to cut through any questions or concerns. But the bottom line is all eligible citizens have a legal right to register to vote on election day itself, and you have until 8 p.m. on election day to do so.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you.
So.
Okay.
That was Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson talking with Keith Ruzanowski from our telecommunications program here at HFC, one of our students.
Very nice job. That was very nicely done and very informative. A lot of information there in a packed time. Mary Jo, let's expand a little bit, if you would. I know you've got some points you want to cover.
The Secretary referred to some of the new rights that we have as a result of passing Prop 3. the two biggie things, the first is register anytime, basically. So up to 14 days before the election, you can register to vote, as she is, Secretary said.
Does that include the primary election coming
yes.
up?
Okay, mm-hmm.
correct. Okay.
So you can do it at the Secretary of State's office. You can do it at your clerk's office, even some designated state offices. And you can now do online. Now, that was not a result of Prop 3. That was actually a result of a legislative rule, law. So that's great. And we were trying it the other night to see if it really works. Of course, since we're registered, we could only go so far. But there was a place where it said something, can we use your valid signature as part of this application? So I'm assuming that they're getting the information from your driver's license. Mm. So the online is really neat. But as Benson said, you can go in even on election day and register to vote. If you do that, they'll give you an absentee ballot if you wish, or you can even go to your precinct, which is kind of neat. And the other big thing was that no reason absentee voting, and people hopefully know that by now. But and you can call your clerk and ask them to send you an absentee ballot. If you do, you might want to consider looking for the mark where you can say, please put me on the permanent absentee ballot list. And what will happen is that you will receive an application without having to do any more work, and then you fill out the application, send that in, and then you'll get the ballot. And one reason it's a good idea to do this is, first of all, you won't miss any voting because maybe you get sick or something, but also it keeps you in the loop. There are some smaller elections sometimes that people maybe don't know about that are so important, like a school millage. So we're really encouraging people to think about absentee balloting or voting, and there is a concern that the clerks are going to be inundated with absentee voting, and are they going to be able to count everything in time? So there is a legislative move to try and allow the clerks to count the ballots a little bit early.
Mm, that's well, because on, you know, and just looking forward to, again, you know, November the biggie, we expect to have that answer like that night before we all go to bed in the Eastern time zone, right? How do we count all those votes if they're coming in through all sorts of different ways?
Right. And for the students, if you're living at home, it's not a deal, but one thing that happened with a lot of students before was they would register maybe through a voter registration drive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it that way, you would, in the past, have had to go to the clerk or to the city hall to sort of get vetted by the clerk. You don't have to do that anymore. And so if you are living at college, though, just call your city clerk. If you live in Livonia, you're going to Michigan State, call the city clerk in Livonia and say, send me an application. Mm-hmm. And you can vote absentee.
But you can also vote for the first time absentee, which is
right,
not
which is
the
different.
Case in the past,
right.
Where college students could not vote absentee.
You had to physically present yourself. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, because they had probably voted in a third-party registration drive. I do one campaign that the league has been working on with the ACLU and voters, not politicians, and also Campus Vote Project is to create a digital portal on the ACLU webpage that's all about voting rights. And that address is www.michiganvoting.org. And everything you'd ever want to know about voting in Michigan is there, with some links, I'm sure, to the Secretary of State's office. But also on that website is something called Know Your Voting Rights, which the ACLU has published for several years. So this is a new one, also in Arabic and Spanish. So this is a really great place. And what's kind of exciting about it is that the fact that the league's working with ACLU and VNP and the college group. For information about candidates, and even for the primary presidential one, there is information that the league has provided at the national level called vote411.org. So if you can, it's kind of one-stop shopping. You can find out from via a link to the Secretary of State's office if you are registered, where you go to vote, and all like that kind of very important information. I did want to mention real quickly about poll workers. Still looking for poll workers in every city. This is a long day for people, but it's you do get paid. But I wanted to mention it because Friday, today, is the last day that you can apply to be a poll worker. So in case anyone's listening and thinking they had a little more time, you don't. Today's the last day.
And so you only have to be 16.
Right. In order to be a poll worker. Mm-hmm. So obviously that's not going to be taking place at the event tomorrow then, in terms of registering people as poll workers, correct?
Correct.
One more time, the event tomorrow, it's at the Caroline Kennedy Library in Dearborn Heights,
correct? At 1 o'clock.
Yep. Beautiful facility.
It really is. Wonderful.
It's an amazing library. Yeah. So, and what, just, 1 o'clock, and then there will be all sorts of opportunities for people not only to, you know, I assume register to vote, but to get involved and get engaged and learn a little bit more about the process.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was mentioned, Susan, last week at the event here on campus was the, and I had seen this in the news earlier in the week, Wayne State is making Election Day a mm-hmm. basically I don't want to say vacation day. It's a work day for students who want to vote. And I got to say, President Russ seemed pretty intrigued by that mm-hmm. idea. As somebody who teaches a class on Tuesdays and always has to vote before and after my class, I'm hoping we can do the same thing here at HFC.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Fingers crossed, absolutely. And not that we want to encourage people to do things just because they're going to get paid to do it, but we just want to clearly mention poll workers do get compensated.
Yes.
Canvassers for the census get compensated. Voters do not, yeah. But also do the people that might be selected for the redistricting, correct?
Yes, they do. The 13 commissioners will get each individually 1/4 of the governor's salary for the time, because it's essentially a full-time job.
Mm. Interesting. So. We could talk on and on. We've got to move forward. Happy Valentine's Day
to all of you.
And as I'm thinking voters, not politicians, I'm kind of thinking, I'm retracting what I said earlier. You can't have voters without politicians. I think you can't have voters without candidates, but maybe we can ease up on the politicians a little bit, if you know what I mean. I just had to say that. But we love our country, and we love the fact that you're here to help us be more educated and informed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
The Valentine's Day edition of the WHFR Journal, healthy snacks, not chocolates. Mm-hmm. How about that? We'll be back with more in just a moment.
WHFR is taking the love theme a little further this Valentine's season by showing love for our pets. Tune in all week long to celebrate the four-legged friends that bring us love and joy all year round. And share your pets on our Instagram page. Follow WHFR FM Radio and use the hashtag WHFR Pet Week and share all the best pictures of your fur babies. Cats, dogs, hamsters, birds, snakes, fish, pet rocks, or turtles. We want to see them all.
Just a reminder that 8-week class registration is still open for Henry Ford College students. The window is closing, but seats are still available for the second half of the semester. If you would like to explore an 8-week class, log on to WebAdvisor or stop by the counseling office.
This is Valentine's Day, and we talk about so many different types of love, our spouse, love of our significant others that are non-spousal, love of family, love of children, love of pets, love of
parents.
The earth and parents, and yes, all these different things. But the one thing that I sense, Alan, that maybe we either take very much for granted or people tend to hide very well, and that is the love of oneself. It's that concept of self-love, being good to oneself, being kind and willing to allow us to be our original authentic selves. It's not as easy as it sounds.
No.
We have an opportunity on a college campus such as ours to meet so many students that have concerns and problems and issues as it relates to just owning their own, you know, sense of who they are and feeling good about it and being able to reach out when they do have a concern or a need. About 3 years ago, a student of mine who was just a brilliant, still is, brilliant, exciting young student, always a different color hair every time she, you know, every week or two she'd reinvent herself and just a wonderful, creative young woman. She introduced for an assignment that we were doing about public service announcements. We got to pick a PSA that you know that was important to us, and I knew right from the start that she had some personal connection with this particular one that she decided to write about. And it was the first time that I'd heard about an organization called To Write Love on Her Arms. Now the student did a brilliant job of creating this public service message, but more importantly, what she did, I think, was she created an awareness not only to me but to the rest of our class about this organization and about some of the very important things that, that they're doing. So as we're focusing on trying to be good to ourselves, kind to ourselves, and love ourselves on this sort of fabricated love holiday, but it's it's an excuse, right? It's an opportunity to go into this.
Not a heck of a lot else going on in the middle of
there
February.
You go. There you go. Thought we would invite one of the key members, key players at this organization, TWLOHA, or To Write Love on Her Arms, to talk a little bit about what they're doing, why they exist, and the impact that they're making, particularly with young people in our communities. So we have on the phone line Chad Moses, and Chad is the director of outreach for the organization To Write Love on Her Arms. I'm so looking forward to learn more about it beyond what I've already done, you know, researched on my own, and I'm sure you are too, Alan. Mm-hmm. Not only as parents of younger, you know, younger people, but also working in an environment where we do have
still
a lot of young
people. Still technically teenagers, yes.
Still
correct,
teenagers, yeah. That's right. So we want to welcome Chad to this conversation, and while we want to celebrate love and be excited about all the wonderful things that might be going on in our lives and in our worlds and in our society, we certainly must recognize and we certainly can't ignore the fact that there are people that are struggling and suffering, and your organization is one of those that is making a difference in a positive way. So Chad, welcome. We are so excited to learn more about To Write Love on Her Arms. Grateful to have you here.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to track me down.
Certainly.
Happy to be here.
Great. We'll get to the name of the organization later, but let's just jump in with both feet and sort of talk about what the organization does. And I don't know if there's a shorter way to say it or if I'm going to remember TWLOHA. I have to write that down so I have it in front of me. But why don't you introduce us to the organization more than Susan had already done?
Absolutely. Well, first, I give you full permission to butcher our name or acronym. It can be a mouthful for sure. Sometimes on staff, we shorten it to Write Love.
Okay.
Or sometimes we just throw the whole acronym together. We make up a word and we say Twaloha. So it's like Aloha, but with a twa.
Twaloha.
So yeah, whatever feels natural to you, you are welcome to do. But absolutely, for those of you that aren't familiar with us, we are a nonprofit organization that exists to present hope and find help for anyone struggling with things like depression, addiction, self-injury, and suicide. And foundationally, you know, we exist to build a better bridge, really, to connect people that are looking for help to local options for help. So we're not the counselors ourselves. We are not the treatment centers. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but so often people aren't aware that a wheel already exists. So we're there to illuminate those pathways. We're there to encourage, to inspire, to inform, and also to invest directly into avenues for treatment and recovery.
Do you have, I hate to get into statistical data, but in terms of numbers of people that you are supporting, that you're helping, that you're maybe sending off in inappropriate directions to find the help that they're looking for, what are statistically some of the things that are, I guess, very, very popular not in a good way, but very popular in terms of issues at this time? We hear about anxiety, certainly depression quite a bit, and self-harm has been something that has been, seems like, kind of up and down in terms of just what we hear locally, but you certainly would know more about that. So give us a bit of a scope, a sense of a scope, if you would, please.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, the people that we're trying to serve, simply we're out there trying to connect anyone that feels like they could use a little bit of help to that help. And I think so often, you know, when we think about these words, depression, addiction, self-injury, suicide, we can expand that further to eating disorders, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, you name it. Odds are for all the listeners here, those are more than words. Those are more than issues or challenges, but they have names and they have faces. So perhaps it's easier to say we're there to support your children. We're there to support your siblings. We're there to support your parents, your teachers, your coworkers, your students, maybe even the person that you look at in the mirror each and every single day. Now, surely we know that there's some statistics that are tied to demographics. So you guys are on a university setting, a college setting. Mm-hmm. So we know that the people that are likely listening to this broadcast right now, that suicide represents the third leading cause of death. And we know that untreated depression is the leading cause of suicide, but perhaps the statistic that has shocked us the most into action is that we learned that 2 out of 3 people who live with depression will never seek help for it. That 2 out of 3 people living with a treatable condition that have been convinced that they have waived their right to interpersonal connection, that their story perhaps doesn't matter. So we're there trying to be as present and visible as possible, whether that's online or whether that's at a music festival, whether that's speaking at a high school or a college or a community of faith. We've really made it our job to be wherever we're welcomed into the conversation. And again, not to be an answer, not to be a destination, but to give you some traveling companions along the road for your journey, for your recovery. Now, we've been around for 14 years, and over that time, you know, some statistics I can toss your way is that we've been able to read and respond to hundreds of thousands of messages. That's over 200,000 messages through email and social media, many of those coming from people who are asking for help for the first time. We've also been able to donate over $2.5 million above our own programming to avenues for treatment and recovery. That's the counseling practices, that's for individual treatment scholarships, that's to helping launch networks that offer life-saving crisis intervention options. So it's, you know, I think we can find whatever metric or impressive number that you want with enough research. But for us, what makes this tick is the individual at the other end of the line, at the other end of the email, at the other end of the booth at a music festival. If we don't exist to make that individual feel seen, heard, valued, and cared for, then the rest of the numbers simply don't add up.
Well, I figured we were going to get back to the origin story of To Write Love, the organization here. And yes, numbers and statistics, 200,000 messages, $2.5 million. But as you mentioned, it all comes down to a name and a face. And I'm assuming the origins of the organization, from what I've read and understand, came from a specific name and face. And I guess she kind of has sort of like the first one, but one of many that the organization has helped. So tell us a little bit about that story.
Totally. Yeah. So she calls herself the her when really pressed. But no, you bring up a great point that our name is curious in that it implies a singular moment, a singular, you know, point in history where this all kind of launched from. So with our name, To Write Love on Our Arms, we're not trying to imply that one gender struggles more mm-hmm. than any other with these issues. But initially, the focus was on helping our friend and telling her story. So the her is our friend Renee, and the story takes place 14 years ago. And Renee's story at that point was one of cocaine addiction and self-injury. And long story short, there was a moment where she decided she was ready for a change, that she was ready to seek the help that her friends were convinced that she deserved. So a story was written about the first 5 days that she spent in recovery, her first 5 days of coming down off drugs and staying safe and staying in the midst of people who cared. It was a story about basketball games and rock shows to keep her distracted. It was a story about cigarettes and coffee for the coming down. It was a story about books for the road ahead. And that story was written by a friend named Jamie Torkowski. He went on to found our organization. But before there was any sort of business plan, any idea of something bigger than this one community, there was a MySpace page. And Jamie wrote a two-page story about what it looked like for a community to come alive and meet Renee's needs in unexpected and sometimes simple ways. And through the sharing of that story, through the magic of MySpace, for you younger listeners,
I was going to say there, you're probably for a college, community college audience, they're like, MySpace, what is that? But you know, this was, you know, obviously in the early days of social media and learning that there is a larger network of people out there. So yeah, sorry, it's just
So picture Facebook without political bots.
There you go.
And maybe you're somewhere close. Actually some t-shirts were made, to help fund Renee's treatment and recovery. And the shirt, had this name on it, to write love on her arms. And that would encourage people to do a quick search engine search for those words. And they would find the story that was also called to write love on her arms. Well, we had some friends in touring bands at the time. They would wear the shirt as they traveled. Their fans got curious. They would find the webpage and they'd say, you know, Renee sounds a lot like my dad. Renee sounds a lot like my best friend, or Renee sounds a lot like me. Are hope and help options for me as well? So it became apparent very quickly that this conversation was much bigger than one person, than one community, than one city. And I think, you know, we still hold tight to that and hold humbly to that. That we hope that we're not saying anything new from this platform that we have, but we do hope that we're reminding you, being kind of a broken record of hope, that a change is possible, that you're still breathing, which means there is still some time. Back when this all got started, it really kind of started with a question. Jamie asked Renee, how would you feel if your story had an audience? What would you say? And she said, I would tell people to hold on to hope. I would tell people that perhaps my story isn't so unique. I would say that if anyone could relate in any part to this story, then maybe it'd be a purpose for some of the pain in my life. So this started as an exercise of hope, of an exercise of defiance, really, that despite everything that life was telling us was true about the situation, that some friends believed in something bigger and better. And we grew from there. We grew from people's honesty, from people sharing their own stories and curious about what effect their stories could have on their own communities. And here we are about 14 years later on a radio station that we certainly didn't know existed 14 years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's a short oral history of how this all got started.
Wow. We are talking on the phone line with Chad Moses, Director of Outreach for the organization To Write Love on Her Arms. And we are talking about options available to take a step in the right direction or to share with someone else the opportunity that does exist to take that step to give yourself permission to feel, you know, to feel loved, to feel positive. One of the things that I notice here, Chad, on the website is the blog component, and this is kind of at least rare in some of the nonprofits. I've seen testimonials on, you know, public service websites, but this one is really deep. And the message that keeps coming through, and based on one from someone with the initials EMM, which is on the site right now, the message is, how you feel right now is not your forever. How you feel right now is not your forever. That was a phrase that this particular writer said that kind of popped into her mind, and that was what gave her some hope. It gave her an opportunity to think, what if there is something else? Maybe this isn't everything, and going from there. And you keep using the phrases seen, heard, valued, cared for. Particularly the seen and the heard suggest to me that one of the biggest issues is that sort of feeling and that sense of invisibility, like I don't matter, I don't count, to my surroundings, to my community, to my family, and most importantly in my own head. So that's a theme that keeps coming over and over. How relevant, how important is that? How real is that message that you've got here on the very front of your website?
Yeah, you know, I think the importance comes into play, and particularly something that we see with the blog time and again, is that sometimes, you know, as someone navigating mental health challenges, you aren't looking for or expecting a quick fix. I would even say, look, you deserve more than a quick solution. You deserve the time it takes to take the time to find a solution that works for you. And so often we lack, as a society, the proper emotional vocabulary to describe what it is we're walking through, what it is we're navigating. So with the blog, we're hoping to expand that emotional dictionary. We're hoping to welcome in some new thoughts, new perspectives, new beliefs, or maybe remind you of some truths that you've forgotten along the way. I think we all want to feel less alone. And I think some of that magic is in reading a blog and feeling, perhaps for the first time, man, maybe I'm not too broken. Maybe seeing someone else describe what I've been holding so close to my chest for so long, maybe just seeing someone else say something familiar is what I need to have the courage to ask for help. I think so often when we think about these words like depression, anxiety, self-injury, behavioral health, mental health, all of that, we're looking at issues that restrict perspective. We're looking at issues that thrive in silence. And, you know, thrive in stigma is a word that you often hear in the industry. And I believe that stigma is whenever silence is the loudest voice in a conversation. So we're there to challenge that stigma. We're there to say that it's okay if you don't have all the words to sort through your life right now. There are people who have been trained. There are people who are off the charts in empathy who don't want to imagine a tomorrow without you in it. So whatever it is your depression is saying is true about your life, we're going to shout our truth towards you as well, and we invite you to believe that. I think at the end of the day, we can laugh better than depression, and we can certainly hug better than depression, and we can certainly connect people better than depression can.
Jan, it seems like obviously, you know, demographic, and you mentioned, you know, here at a community college environment where, you know, a lot of our students are sort of in that 18 to 22 year old demographic. It's great to, you know, I mean, to sort of chuckle about MySpace and, you know, what social media was like then. How is it different now? Now, I mean, coming of age and these issues of trying to find your place in the world, trying to find your worth in the world, they go back generations. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of literature that's been written about it, but it seems like in the last 10, 15 years, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're in a completely different environment when it comes to social media.
Oh, I certainly believe that the environment, it's a brave new world, for sure, that my generation, you know, we got to write the rule book for etiquette in the digital age, which I don't think was necessarily a great thing. But we are now coming to a point where there's a generation behind us that we're no longer the sole digital natives, you know? So we're getting to learn from folks younger than us. We're getting to learn, how to be vulnerable and maybe even be vulnerable in more responsible ways than we initially knew were possible when we first started with MySpace, Zynga, LiveJournal. I don't need to go through.
But also, you know, in an environment, in an environment where the pressure seems probably greater than ever for people who may feel those vulnerabilities.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at To Write Love's role in social media, we've certainly been able to see both the best and the worst that social media has to offer. We've seen how it can be isolating. We've seen how it can allow unhealthy myths surrounding mental health and behavioral health to really thrive. And I think we're turning a corner. Maybe that's just blind optimism, but I think generationally speaking and societally, we've seen the harvest that bullying leads us to. We've seen the cost associated with cruelty online, with nameless and faceless cruelty. But we're also seeing how we can be anonymously kind. And we've also seen how we can forge a community, you know, through Twitter. I have legitimate friends on Twitter that I've never met and perhaps never will, but I know that these are folks that have my back, that are there to celebrate with me and there to pick me up on down days. Now, all that being said, I don't think that a computer screen or a phone screen will ever replace the value of a face-to-face interaction, of consistency, of voice inflection, of seeing eyes well up in a conversation instead of having to find the perfect emoji to convey what you're feeling. And I think, you know, one of those gifts that we're seeing in this digital age is also found on our website, where we have crowdsourced free and reduced cost mental health care options specific to zip code. And we call that our Find Help tool. So if you visit our website at TWLOHA.com, you're going to find a blue button in the upper right-hand corner. If you click on that, you can find options based on treatment level and based on geography, places where you can begin that journey to find that consistent, unconditional positive regard that you deserve.
When we talk about events that, you know, to some people could be sappy, syrupy, sweet, you know, Best Friends Day, Valentine's Day, Sweetest Day, all those days that we're supposed to celebrate what some people consider, you know, opinion of the perfect relationship, the perfect this and that. And when somebody is struggling, I suspect that could actually very much have a negative impact. You alluded to that a little bit. I'm fascinated with one of the events that you're offering through the organization, and it looks like it's called Valentine's Day Doesn't Have to Suck, and it is a Twitter chat, and it's taking place literally tonight. Do you do many of these things, and exactly what's that about? What will we find, or who will we find on something like that?
Absolutely. So the Twitter chat, like you mentioned, begins tonight at 8 Eastern, and that is open to anyone with access to a Twitter account. So what we're doing there is really just saying, again, if today is difficult, if today is hard, you do not have to process today alone. So there's no agenda other than knowing that you're going to be in good company on Twitter for a little bit. So we're going to have a hashtag. We're going to have some threaded conversations. It's going to be staffed by our communications team as well as our interns. And this is an awesome intern group. We have the most international intern group ever, with representatives from India, from Belgium, from Wales, and throughout the States as well. So they're going to be manning the chat line along with our founder, Jamie. And we don't have a goal of conversation. We leave it open to you. Any questions you have, any concerns, any stories, any jokes, anything to feel like you are being heard and valued. So we don't do too many of these kind of ask me anything style forays online, but we are constantly trying to travel to meet people in your own community, whether, like I said earlier, at your school or at a music festival. But we do believe in the value of questions, certainly as it pertains to issues about life and mental health, that we've been programmed for short answers. But really, we learn way more through intentional question asking, I believe. And so, yeah, this is a place where your questions are welcome, where your life is valued. And yeah, hopefully that you can spend a couple hours with us, or maybe just a couple tweets with us, just to make sure that your life, that you are convinced that your life is something worth sharing.
Chad, as we've so much enjoyed this conversation, learning more about the organization or the movement, as it's called on the website. So I love that. And so referring to Right Love is more of a movement than an organization. And I love the concept of MOVE. And I understand that when we talk about ways to get involved for community members, for schools, for, you know, people that might not directly be affected that they know of, or that, you know, are not necessarily, you know, this is new to them, perhaps. On your website, there are lots of opportunities to get involved, partnering, hosting an event, you know, maybe even starting a chapter on our college, a U chapter, as you call them. But also this concept of MOVE, bringing MOVE to your community. Tell us a little bit about that. And I suspect that this would be just very enlightening to people that are not necessarily adept at looking for warning signs or looking to find people that this message would be appropriate for.
Absolutely. So our MOVE Community Conference is something that we really believe in, that we love, that we've been able to roll out to communities for almost a decade now. And we're in 2020. So we turn the MOVE program turns 11 this year, which is amazing. So with the MOVE Community Conference, we love to visit your community. We travel with friends of ours who are licensed mental health professionals, and we look at these issues. So often we don't talk about mental health because we feel like we don't have the right words to discuss it. We don't talk about depression because I don't have the letters behind my name to talk about it, which that's a myth, that anything in your life that you're experiencing, you're allowed to process verbally or through written word as well. So with the MOVE conference, we come to communities with licensed mental health professionals to walk you through what these issues are. And then the flip side of it is, this isn't just education, this isn't just seminar, but this is about empowering and motivating your community to take this information and find how do we then add the human element? How do we add the empathetic line through this, you know, clinical information to really affect our community? That we're not going to allow silence to have the loudest voice. So here are the words that we can use to speak about these issues. And then how do we go about conducting those conversations? So it really is kind of a 1-2 punch of education and empowerment.
We're very, very pleased with the information. Incredibly thorough, Chad, and it's obviously coming from a place of sincere kindness, concern, passion, and an interest in maybe even some experience, as you alluded to. Grateful for your time today. You make today better, as does every single person that is hearing us right now, and we encourage our listeners to check out this just amazing website, To Write Love on Her Arms, TWLOHA.com. Chad, happy Valentine's Day. And we wish you continued wonderful things in your future with this organization.
Well, thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I look forward to seeing you up in Michigan sometime soon.
Love to have you. Talk again. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. There's still more to come. I know today's Valentine's Day, but it is also right here in like smack dab in the middle of Black History Month. We're going to talk about some activities going on in the city of Dearborn related to Black History Month when we come back in just a moment. We do hope you'll stay with us.
Looking to add a four-legged friend to your family? Well, here's the opportunity for you. Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit is sponsoring a program for the month of February, where all adoption fees are either waived or offered at a reduced option, all thanks to a generous donation from Mary Ann Bright. So if you've been debating about the right time to get a pet, now is the time, but only for the month of February. Go to MetroDetroitAnimals.org to learn how to save one of their animals and welcome them into your home.
As we wrap up the Valentine Day celebration, we are still very mindful of the Black History Month celebration that is taking place throughout the month of February. And on our phone line at this time is Christina Shepherdesius, and she represents, as executive director, the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority and West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority organization. And we know that this is an opportunity to bring the two sides of this big, beautiful community community together. And in this case, we're bringing it together in celebration of Black History Month. Christina, we are excited to briefly go through the rundown of events that are still taking place throughout this month. And welcome to our airwaves. And please share with us what our guests in the community can still participate in actively for Black History Month here in Dearborn.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thanks for having me. And this is the first time that we're doing this in terms of this celebration and promotion. So we're really excited to bring it and look forward to, you know, growth in future years with it. But we do have a couple more things coming up this month. On February 21st, we're really paying homage to some local talent that we have, some real makers within our community, and specifically Al Wisdom, who is a fashion designer and will be speaking to fashion industry and how it relates to hip-hop and the Black culture within within our community and obviously within the Metro Detroit area. And that will be held on February 21st at Art Space Connector Building. And so for those of you who don't know, the Art Space Box is right attached with City Hall Park in the East Downtown area. And the Connector Building is where all the commercial action is happening now. We have a few new businesses that are in there that are all artisans, and obviously the residents that live in Art Space, we have over 50 artists that live in Art Space itself.
That's an incredibly interesting space, and the transformation that it's taken over the last, decade and a half, possibly?
Yeah, absolutely. Probably, 5 years that City Hall has really transformed and, you know, restoring the architecture and history of that building, which is great, but giving it new life with a new fresh perspective, I think.
Very good. And we're excited that this is sort of the inaugural opportunity to spend some time focusing on the African-American culture and community. And, boy, that first event sounds fantastic. What else have we got?
Yeah, so then the next one is on February 28th. And we're working with Sisters Cashing In, which what we're doing is we're working to help provide information, resources, to women entrepreneurs so that they can learn about how to get their business started and what the resources are available to them, not only from us, but also from other partnering organizations in the area to really support Black women entrepreneurs. And this will still be held at Art Space Connector. That event is from 4 to 6 on the 28th. And I forgot to mention the time of the other one. The other one is from 6 to 8. 21st.
Also, so next Friday from 6 to 8, and then the one on the 28th also from 6 to 8.
Yeah, and this is a nice opportunity for people to...
I
was just going to say nice opportunity. Yeah, for people to go on the 28th, right, for people to come after work if they're working in the community or living in the community, just to pop in and spend an hour or two learning about some things that are very creative, certainly appropriate with the art space, but also just to explore something, to experience different culture. When you were looking for opportunities to help promote and celebrate Black History Month, what was the process like, Christina, getting, and I know these are not the only two, but the two, as we're in the tail end here, but what was the opportunity like getting connected with scheduling these events?
We have a really great volunteer who is also on our board of directors, who lives in Art Space, and she herself is a Black woman entrepreneur, and we, really took the lead from her in terms of connecting with the right resources within the area that we could all partner together, and really who she knows, too. So we're excited to kind of bring that to fruition, tapping into the people, the volunteers who make up our great organization.
Right.
one more time, a website where people could go to get more information about the events. I think we're looking for it here, but I assume you know it by heart.
Yes, I do. So www.downtowndearborn.org. And for anyone who needs to just pick up the phone, you can always call us at 313-943-3141.
downtowndearborn.org. Information about Black History Month activities here in the city of Dearborn, and I would assume, I'm sure there will be a lot of other activities in that space and around the community and in the downtown area as we head into the spring and summer months as well.
Sounds great.
Oh, yeah. Well, great, thank you.
Christina, we thank you for your time today and helping get the word out about these couple of events. And don't be a stranger. We'll stay in touch and continue to spread the word about the great things going on. Thank you for your time, and enjoy the rest of your month as well.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Talk again. Bye-bye.
And thanks so much for listening to the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. It's been great to spend this hour with you here at WHFR.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed being your Valentine this past hour, Alan. Thank you. I will pass the crown over now to your lovely wife, of course.
That's I was going to say, and vice versa.
Yes, thank you.
For the evening, I'm sure you have lots more things planned. So anyway, great to be with all of our listeners as well. The most loyal Valentines of all, loyal listeners.
No doubt about it.
All right. Kitty Love is up next with a trip down Highway 61. Have a great Friday afternoon. We look forward to being with you again next week on the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek. Thanks so much.
Have you ever wanted to work in radio? Whether it be a hobby or maybe stepping stone to build your career? Henry Ford College has the right program for you. TCM 189 is an 8-week course that teaches the fundamentals of broadcasting and helps people become a better broadcaster. After completing the course, graduates will be eligible for a show right here on WHFR. For more information, go to hfcc.edu. There's only a few spots per semester, and seats fill up quickly. So log on to your web advisor today and reserve your place for TCM 189.
Building relationships during recovery from mental and substance use disorders can put the strength of family and community behind you. We're all connected, offering encouragement, support, and hope. Join the Voices for Recovery. Strengthen families and communities.
For confidential information on mental and substance use disorders, including prevention and treatment referrals for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
South.